The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by HubSpot. Imagine growing a business with high-quality leads, fast-closing deals, and wildly happy customers. It's not a miracle. It's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
From the editorial team at LinkedIn, I'm Jesse Hempel, and this is Hello Monday, a show about the changing nature of work and how that work is changing us. Some people are born knowing exactly what they want to do. The path is obvious. But for a lot of us, it's much more fuzzy. We end up in our first jobs for all sorts of reasons. Mom told us to go to law school. Uncle Bob offered us an internship. And if things work out, we stick around. Maybe the money is good, or maybe we're traveling up the career ladder. And inevitably, we reach a point where we ask ourselves, is this really the right way for me to spend my time? Do I even like it? Earlier this fall, I talked about this kind of career crisis with my friend Jerry Colonna, the job coach.
And it's at that moment that's ripe with possibility. And it's scary. And there are many, many human beings faced with the privilege of being able to come to that moment of potential actualization and choose to walk away from it.
And I get that it's safer to stay in a job that you may not love. But this week, I wanted to talk to someone who had done the opposite of safe. Jessica Powell was head of PR for Google. It was a big corporate job, and she didn't hate it. She liked her colleagues. She got paid very well. But for a long time, she was unhappy. She worked all the time. She didn't always feel great about that work. And then she quit. And I think a lot of us dream about doing that. And yes, I know this is an incredibly privileged position, but listen, that's the kind of thinking that sometimes keeps people in jobs long after they've questioned what they're doing with their time. Our lives are really short. We have to be urgent when we think about our careers. Jessica did just that. She talked a lot about the challenge of figuring out what you love for yourself versus letting your career dictate it, and the strength it takes to quit something you like fine enough when you can't be certain you'll be happier in the future. But first, you have to understand how Jessica got to Google in the first place. She just moved to London. She was 26. Here's Jessica.
And so I applied for a ton of jobs, journalism jobs. No one wanted to talk to me. I had no local knowledge and didn't have a particularly long or impressive writing resume. But I applied for waitressing jobs. I applied for a CEO job. I applied for every job that was in the Guardian ads. And my husband suggested, he was like, well, you know, why don't you apply to Google? Like, a lot of people we know seem to work there. Maybe you'd like that.
What year are we?
Oh, this would be 2006.
Okay.
And I applied and they called me back and I went in and I totally flubbed my interviews. But the woman who wanted to hire me and who ultimately became my boss hired me as a contractor. So I failed the Google interview process, but got hired on a contract.
I remember about the Google interview process is that it's quite onerous. You're failing the interview process is not exactly a failure in that basically Google at that point in particular really focused on PhDs from upper echelon Ivy League schools or don't bother.
Yeah, I think that probably going to Stanford got me in the door, right? They're much broader in who they bring in now, but I think back in the day it was very focused on a handful of universities, which of course creates a lot of problems. But I think that got me through the door, which was great. But then the interview itself was, it didn't necessarily feel like it mapped to my skills. At the same time, I don't know how many skills I really had at the time. It felt like it was being challenging for the exercise of being challenging and almost to intimidate you. You know, one guy came in and didn't look up from his computer the entire time he typed, which is, it wasn't actually that I didn't need eye contact. I didn't need some human connection during an interview necessarily, but it was the typing. I just couldn't focus because it was just tap, 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 tap. And
Let me stop you, Jessica.
Yeah.
Given the company that you just described, why would you want to go and work there in the first place? Like, why, when the contracting position came up, did you think that was a good idea?
I had rent to pay. You know, I was very, I don't know if obsessed is maybe too strong of a word. I was always very worried about the bottom falling out. And so when I was in New York, I took the job that paid the best of all the journalism jobs I could find. When I got to London, no one really wanted to hire me. And I had rent, you know? And on top of that, like, I'd heard great things about Google from people I knew who worked there.
Right. So that was 2006. And then you spent most of your career there. You stepped out briefly and went to a startup and came back. Tell me what kind of work you did during the time that you were there.
So I started off in London. I was working in, because my background had been copyright, working at a nonprofit around copyright, it was pretty natural that they were bringing me on as a contractor to work around kind of copyright and press. Google was having a lot of issues with book search then, and then they had a problem with Google News, and then they acquired YouTube, and they had a problem with YouTube. So I was I started working on that. And initially, because Google in Europe was very small then, this is all post-IPO, so it's hard for people to imagine that Google post-IPO was small, but actually in Europe it was. I think we were a couple hundred people, maybe in London, maybe in all of Europe. I don't even remember. And so I was hired in through the communications department, but I did some marketing, I did some product management, I did some policy stuff, and it was great. Like, it was kind of chaotic, and it felt very startup-like, and I started doing that. But then as my career went on, we became more specialized. I started focusing more on communications because they started to build out the European team. And eventually ran Southern Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, then went over to Japan, where I'd lived previously, and based out of Tokyo, ran communications there. And then, like you said, went off to a startup in London, and eventually then back to Google, where I then came back and ran communications.
And when you say ran communications for Google, and at this point, Google was, how many people was it when you left?
Oh, I don't know, maybe 80,000, maybe?
So if you think about the relationship that you have with a company or an employer over the course of a decade and a half, rather like a love relationship, a romance, let's say, if you think about that relationship like a romance, was there a sort of a stable part of the relationship followed by a falling out of love? Like, what was the process of being there like?
I mean, on the whole, it was great. I think I was given a huge amount of opportunity. I met wonderful people, people that I'm still close to. What happened by the end was that I felt very burned out. I felt very, I felt like I worked all the time. I mean, not just felt, I did. I worked all the time. I felt like my identity was entirely tied to my job. I would go to a party and someone would introduce me or someone would ask what I would do. And there would be this second after I answered or someone introduced me where people would be like, oh, you have that job or whatever. And there might have been a second on my side where I would feel good, right? Like, oh, what validation, right? People are interested in you. You know, they don't necessarily want to talk to you, but they're all of a sudden interested in you because of what you do. But still, that feels good, right? Like, we're all kind of base creatures and we all have some level of ego, and that would feel nice. But then a second or two later, it would feel very empty, you know? And it wasn't like I was the most enlightened person in the world, but I could still tell that that wasn't right. You know, like it felt empty. And so I think there'd been this thing lurking in my head for my final, you know, 2 or 3 years there where I knew that there was something not right. And there was also part of me that felt like, you have this job that so many people would want. Why do you not want it? And should you be in it versus walk, like, give someone else a chance to do this and also give yourself a chance to do something more or do something different. But I couldn't quite articulate that to myself. I look back at it now and it seems very obvious. But all I could figure out was that I wasn't happy. And it took me 2 years or 3 years. There was an essay I wrote on Medium that was about, like, the 837-step plan to quit your job. And it felt like that to me. It was all the contortions, mental contortions I went through to convince myself that no, the job wasn't a problem. I just needed to solve for this or wait until this milestone happened and that everything would be fine then. And I went and, like, I did online quizzes, which is ridiculous, like searching on Google to ask if I should quit my job. And some of the stuff that you get when you get that, they're so extreme. I mean, they're certainly applicable to a lot of jobs, but, like, do you hate your boss? Well, I didn't hate my boss, you know, and do you dread every single morning going into the office? And I was like, dread is a strong word, you know, and I could never really, it was never definitive enough for me. And so I would just keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And finally, I realized that that I just didn't feel in control of my life and that I needed to solve for that, that I needed to figure out how I could take control back of my life. And once I did that, it became so much easier. Like, once I finally leveled with myself that it wasn't about staying in the job and making that job better or finding a similar job. Like, I was going to have the same issues if I went to Facebook or Apple or LinkedIn, wherever it might be. The problem wasn't specifically Google. And so I needed to solve for that. And that's kind of when my process started about how to get out of it.
How long did that period take, do you think? Was it, you know, a few weeks, a few months, a few years?
Like 2 years, maybe. Yeah, I'd say about 2 years, because it really did take me a while to understand that underlying problem, because I couldn't somehow reconcile. I always thought that quitting your job, when I left my job as the energy markets reporter, for example, it was clear to me that this was not for me, that I didn't like talking to traders every single day, that was not my future. When I left my job at the startup in London, it was clear to me, I felt like it was a toxic environment, and it was clear to me that I needed to go. Whereas here, it wasn't so clear. Like, I loved my coworkers, and there was so much that was good. At the same time, I started to doubt some of the substance of my job. Oh, but those coworkers, I liked them, and I couldn't, right. It just didn't seem like a clear signal. And so it took me a long time to realize, no, you need to, okay, you need to go. And then there was a period that was also very long of, okay, if you're going to go, and if you've admitted to yourself that too much of your life and your identity and everything is tied up in this job, what are you going to do when you walk out that door and all of a sudden there's nothing? You know, are you going to be this super chill person that you've never been and, like, you know, hang out for 6 months and figure it out and meditate? Like, I knew that that wouldn't work for me, that I was used to being very productive and I have a lot of nervous energy, and that I needed to channel it into something, and that I needed to have something that I could fall into that might not lead to anything at all, but that would give some kind of structure to my day and would feel like some kind of purpose of something I always wanted to explore or do, so that I wouldn't wake up after a one-week vacation, so to speak, and be like, whoa, I just walked away from what some people would see as the best job in communications. And not only do I not have a salary, but I don't know who I am and I don't know what I'm doing with my life.
What you're talking about sounds to me like something that I've seen happen and even experienced, which is when you work for an organization and you're with it for a really long time, sometimes that line in between who you are and what you want for your life and who that organization is and what it might want for your path gets blurry. And it becomes easier to just let the organization dictate what your next step should be according to what the next step is that ambitious people do with the organization. And it becomes more and more difficult with every year that you're there to take a step back and say, no, who am I? What's my North Star? What am I supposed to be doing with this life? And I wonder if that's why a lot of people a third of the way into their career look up and have that moment where they're like, well, I'm doing the thing. Why doesn't it feel different?
And I think there's a lot of self-doubt, right? I absolutely agree with you. It's also because in a lot of cases, granted, there are cases where the job is clearly bad. Either it doesn't fit with your skills and you figured that out, or your manager is horrible. I mean, that happens quite often, right? That people have a bad manager and they don't see any way out but to get away from that manager and therefore the company. But I also think there's just a large bucket of people that are like, well, what is the right amount of happiness that I should find from my job, right? And I don't necessarily expect that I'm going to be happy 100% or even 90% of the time in my job. It is a job. But is 50% the right amount? And if I leave this job where I'm happy 50% of the time, am I just going off to another thing where I'm going to be 50% of the time happy? And should I really be doing that? You know, and so I think there's that calculation too, where you're just like, you don't really know how much of almost your own instinct to trust and how to calibrate all these other options that you might have.
So stepping away from pretty good to see if there's better is actually a really hard thing to do, right? Stepping away from very bad to hope that there's better, you can predict that better is ahead. But when you step away from pretty good, it's a leap of faith.
Right.
What happened in your life that finally pushed you to take the step?
I went away from my second maternity leave. And I think up until that maternity leave, I had been telling myself, I'd come up with, well, hypotheses or excuses, whichever you want to call it, where I was telling myself, no, you're not happy because you're pregnant. And I never really enjoy being pregnant. and it always just, I found my second pregnancy also very hard, like physically very hard. And I was exhausted all the time and I was sick all the time. And I said, you need to go away. You need to have this baby. And maybe when you come back, you'll realize that your job is actually much better than you think. Like, you can't trust yourself right now. And so there was enough of a moment where I was heading off a maternity leave where I did tell myself, no, you need to do something about this. by the time you come back. And you either need to just stop moaning in your head about it, or you really do need to start taking some kind of action. And while I was on maternity leave, I applied to grad school, a grad school that was 10 minutes from my house. It was to do an MFA in fiction writing. And so I thought, you know what, you're going to go do this thing also where you have no gauge for what success is. And you're just going to go learn a skill. Like, you're going to learn how to run, or you're going to learn to play tennis, or you're going to learn how to write short stories that are 10 pages long. Because I wanted something that also had no frame of reference for me. Like, I knew that if I had gone off to another communications job, whatever issues to that point about 50% of this is right and 50% of this is wrong, maybe some of that would incrementally get better or worse. But I would also have this idea of what success was. I felt like I'd gotten too tied to achievement and too tied to my identity being tied to my work. And continuing in the same industry in a similar job, that wasn't going to improve that. And so I was like, go off and learn this skill that you're probably not going to be that great at, and that maybe one day you could be good at, but it's going to take time. And you'll have no way to tell it other than just the joy of writing and like learning a new skill. You'll have no, there won't be this voice in your head comparing it to everything else. So I applied and I got in, and I paid, I remember, like in, it was in April or March, I paid the $100 deposit. And from that moment, it all of a sudden just became possible.
How did money factor into your decision to step away from Google?
It's driven my decisions a sense of, I always felt like I had to make enough that if all of a sudden everything dropped out from under me, I would have enough savings or a safety net or something that I would be okay for a little bit of time. Even when I made that job where I picked in New York, that the $32,000 a year, over a 2-year period, I think I saved like $15,000 or $20,000 of my 18 months of salary during that job. Because I spent no money, because I was convinced, I'm always convinced there's like an apocalypse looming, and I had to make sure that I could still live, you know? So certainly, like in those early years, it was, what is the job that can pay me the most that I can continue to be safe, so to speak? Later, though, when I left to go do the startup, startups generally fail. You know, I didn't expect, and I took a massive, massive pay cut, like huge pay cut to go work there. Not having a lot of cash early on in my career, I think, made me much more relaxed about not, like, I think by the time I left Google, I was making quite a bit of money. I think I also felt like I was making too much money. I just don't think these jobs should actually be paid the way they are. And I knew I was not living at the level of the salary I was making. And I felt comfortable. And I also knew that if there was a disaster that happened and I needed to immediately start working in a communications job, I could get a communications job and start working. So I felt pretty good about that. It didn't feel like I left a ton of money on the table, because that's how you stay in these companies too, is that there's all this unvested equity that keeps getting re-upped and re-upped. So yes, I walked away from a lot of stuff, but at some point you walk away. Like, there will always be unvested equity. And so I think it's just a calculation of what's your current situation and how much can you stomach.
The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by TIAA. In the last 100 years, we've seen financial markets swing, new currencies come and go, decades of savings lost in days, all showing that a retirement plan without a guarantee, quite simply, isn't enough. So more than a retirement plan, TIAA makes you a retirement promise, a promise of a guaranteed retirement paycheck for life, a promise that pays off. Learn more at TIAA.org/promisespayoff. The LinkedIn Podcast Network is sponsored by HubSpot. More to-dos, less time, and so many tools to keep track of. Doing business can be hard, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You just need HubSpot. Their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: higher quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
So what are your tips on leaving a job?
Obvious caveat that there are a lot of people that have to stay in their current jobs for financial reasons and personal reasons. And like, you have to look at that stuff first and make sure that you can accommodate and provide for those needs. But if you have flexibility beyond that and are contemplating a change, I think you have to be really honest with yourself about what you're solving for. Like, I saw over and over again when I was a manager that people would come into my office and dance around what they wanted, any other number of subjects, but what they had really come there to talk about. And those, and even if it wasn't explicitly about leaving their job or career, a lot of the things actually that were focused around career pointed at different kinds of needs, right? Sometimes it's the need for recognition. Sometimes it's the need for money, or for power. And we all have, I think, a really hard time articulating that because we have certain judgments, or society has certain judgments about which of those are good and which of those are bad. And you can have a whole conversation about, should we value achievement so much? Of course we shouldn't. Should we value constantly improving your salary even once you're past a point where you could live just fine? No, of course not. But that's actually not productive when you're trying to figure out how to change your job. And so because we don't feel comfortable talking about those things, we don't always solve for what we really need to solve for. And because, I mean, who, when you think of all the people you've worked with, how many people are transparent about the fact that, like, actually their ego matters a ton and they want to be recognized for what they're doing. And actually they might even sacrifice an extra $5,000 a year, whatever the amount is, if their name was just in the equivalent of, like, in lights all the time, right? And yet for other people, that doesn't matter at all. And they're really interested in new experiences. Like, they want to switch jobs every 18 months. And they're very happy getting the necessary recognition for the work they're doing, but they don't need this huge ego play. But you really need to cater to their curiosity, their intellectual curiosity. And so I think that's a problem.
Do you think that we are well positioned to know for ourselves what it is that motivates us? Would you be able to say for yourself, I knew that this is the thing that made me light up?
I think looking back on it, and certainly by the time I was willing to confront, because I kept on not addressing those issues, right? Like, I'd go for another job interview at a place that actually was worse than Google in so many ways, like culturally and the job fit and everything. But I would go interview there because I'd be like, well, maybe the problem is Google. The problem wasn't Google, right? The problem was me in relation to Google. But it was so much easier, even though time-wise it felt like it was significant, to go on another job interview or to tell myself, okay, you just need to get past, say, Google I/O, like a big developer conference. It was always easier to set these external things rather than actually look at yourself and say, all right, well, when are you the happiest in your job? When are you the least happy in your job? And when I could come up with a list of the mental list, I guess, of the things that I was least happy about, it would be things like, you hate the fact that someone can calls you regularly at 11 o'clock at night or at 5 in the morning because there's some sort of PR crisis happening somewhere. You actually hate the fact that a lot of PR people, for example, thrive on crisis and instability of the job. Like, you never know what you're going to get. I am a person who eats oatmeal every single day for breakfast and will for the rest of my life. I love it. I want the most uninspiring thing about me, probably, like, I want more stability in my job. Like, I definitely want a good portion of my workday to be oatmeal, you know? And, like, so probably working in a job where there are so many crises around the clock, maybe not the best job for you, you know? But again, it took me a long time to, because I was so wound up in what my identity was or what my job was. How do you say, wait, you actually just should not even be in this industry, maybe, you know? And so I think, yeah, it's just having to figure out what motivates you in life. And I think we are all motivated by very, very different things. And if you can get at that core, then everything becomes much, much easier. And then, you know, if it's money or if it's achievement, okay, go solve for that. And then figure out this longer life process of how you get away from that, because that's ultimately not going to make you happy. But in the short term, it'll at least help you figure out what your next job needs to be.
Well, listen, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Jessica Powell, ex-Googler and author of The Big Disruption. We taped this interview a couple months ago, and I've been wondering about how she felt about quitting. I mean, it's been almost 2 years now. So I called her.
Hello?
Hey, Jessica, it's Jessie. How are you?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good. Thank you for taking the call. So it has been a little while since we spoke, and it has now been a couple of years since you left your job at Google. And I wanted to know in the interim if you feel happy now that you did that.
Yes. Can you imagine if I was like, no, it was the worst decision I ever made? yeah, no, it's fantastic. like I'm super happy. This is probably the happiest I've been in a decade. I don't know. I mean, I don't really measure things, but yeah, I'm very happy.
So if you look back at that time in your life, is there any advice, knowing what you know now, that you would give yourself?
You know, I think I learned a ton working at a big company and working at startups. And so I don't regret having gone into that career at all. But I do wish I had perhaps stopped a bit sooner. I think like a lot of us, sometimes you get into the trap of thinking that your career is headed towards some sort of destination, or that you need to get to the top or go as far, not necessarily the top of the top, but get to the, you know, the first you can go in a particular company or in a particular hierarchy. And when I actually look back at my job and my career, the times where I was the happiest was actually never when I had the most money or the most power or the most people reporting into me. It tended to be actually where the times where I had closer relationships with the people I was working with, and either, again, people working for me or my peers, and where we were working together on something. And so I think finding a way earlier on and maybe leaving a company or something to then be able to continue to do that would have been a wise move for me, because I think I actually on some level knew that that was the stuff I enjoyed the most.
Now, I hope this episode resonated with some of you. Chances are you've gone through the experience of quitting a job, or you wanted to quit a job. So what makes you stay? And what makes you go? Drop us a line at hellomonday@linkedin.com or post on LinkedIn using the hashtag HelloMonday. If you enjoyed listening, subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts. It helps new listeners find the show. And join me next week. We'll have writer Arthur Brooks on the show. He's introduced this idea of professional decline. He thinks that as you age, your skills may change and you need to adapt. Doesn't sound like rocket science, but... anyways, he has some advice on how you can chase work that feels meaningful for a lifetime.
Money, power, pleasure, and fame. If these are the things that you're chasing centrally in your life, you're gonna struggle. On the other hand, the things that do bring enduring happiness, you know, the transcendent, faith in the vernacular, family, friendship, and earned success through your work, those are the things that truly do bring enduring happiness to people. And, you know, the tomes have been written, including some by me, on this subject.
Hello Monday is a production of LinkedIn. The show was produced by Laura Sim. Joe DiGiorgi mixed our show. Florencia Iriondo is head of original audio and video. Dave Pond is our technical director. Our magical listener extraordinaire this week is Victoria Taylor. Our music was composed just for us by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder, and you also heard music from Poddington Bear. Dan Roth is the editor-in-chief of LinkedIn. I'm Jesse Hempel. See you next Monday, and thanks for listening. How are your kiddos?
They're good. They're good. I found it actually harder to be away from them on this trip. Like, they just get better. And I'm sure you've seen this, right? Like,
yeah.
They just get more interactive and more. I actually did not find it as hard. And I always felt a little uncomfortable when women at work would talk about how hard it was for them to go back, and that they spent the whole day looking at their baby photos. And I was kind of like, am I a bad mom? Because I actually really like coming back to work. And
right.
I don't feel like I'm sad to leave them in the morning, in the sense of I'm very sad in that moment of when you're saying goodbye and they.
Right.
They look sad and you feel sad. But once I'd be at work, I would like compartmentalize and I'd enjoy doing the work.
That.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, what does this say about me? It's like, I'm, you know. And now it's gone the other way, where I'm just like, oh, no, you just don't like babies that much. Like, okay.
These small humans are great. Yeah.